to the Wibbly Wobbly Timey Wimey Podcast.
I'm Talia Franks, media critic, fanfic enthusiast, and my mom dated a sailor once.
And I'm Lucia Kelly, expert at applied analysis and the King of Belgium.
And we're here today to talk about The Idiot's Lantern, the seventh episode of Series 2 of Doctor Who.
The Idiot's Lantern aired on the 10th of November 2006. It was written by Mark Gatiss and directed by Eros Lynn.
Reminder that time isn't a straight line. It can twist into any shape, and as such, this is a fully spoiled podcast. We might bring things in from later in the show, the comics, the books, audio dramas, or even fan theories and articles.
With that out of the way, those Union flags are upside down, so let's get in the TARDIS.
Content warning for this episode for discussions of spousal and parental abuse, ableism, and brief mention of sexual assault.
As the coronation of Elizabeth II nears, the streets of London live in fear. Faceless people are stolen from their homes in the night, and something evil is lurking in the television.
This is the one where Rose encourages a teenager to reconcile with his emotionally abusive father, even though he spent the whole goddamn episode focusing on his own growth as a person outside of that toxic relationship.
Oh my God! I hate this episode.
I hate this episode so fucking much. It sucks.
Here's the thing. It's a romp for like a good 40 minutes. I'm enjoying myself for a good 40 minutes. And then the last 5 minutes is like, fuck all that. We're just going to undo everything we just did. We're going to undo everything we talked about and set up in terms of healthy boundary setting and addressing toxic masculinity in the 50s. And just, it's a happy holiday. No, it's not. I'm so mad.
You're so mad that your audio cut out, and I'm not sure that the listeners are going to be able to hear you.
And it makes me angry more because it is fun up until that point. And then it pushes all of my buttons and it feels like a betrayal. Like, we could have had a good time. We could have. And we did not.
I'm literally sipping tea right now. I mean, like, Rose's outfit, the doctor's hair, like, it was all ready for us.
It was so ready. We were so ready to have a good, fun time in the 50s.
Also, I gotta say, I really liked the moment where the doctor turns it on Detective Inspector Bishop and is just like, start from the beginning, tell me everything you know.
I love that moment. It's so good.
It's just so great, and the lighting and everything about it is just fantastic. Okay, so I will say that up until Rose did the terrible thing, I was really loving Rose. I was thinking, oh man, Rose is great. Rose is doing so many great things here. And then, no. Also, I will say, going by yourself to see Magpie, Rose?
I know, right?
Really? Really? That was not smart.
It's damseling Rose again. She makes a dumb decision just so she can be victimized. And then the doctor can be like, oh, I'm angry. I'm angry, even though this...
There's nothing on this earth that can stop me now. Like, you made this personal.
Never mind that he was fully invested before.
The doctor was already fully invested.
He was already fully invested. He was already fully motivated. There's nothing noble. There's nothing attractive. This is not a good trait to have. It's weird that it's presented as such.
Yeah, and it's also just like, Rose is too interesting of a character to have her shuttled off to the side like this. Like, I liked her investigating, going after Magpie, figuring out what's going on, but it didn't really matter because all it did was get her face sucked out.
Right? Like, can you imagine if Rose never goes to Magpies, she doesn't get her face sucked off. So we have all of this extra time. And then we, instead of having it that time devoted to that, we can have the little fun Tommy Rose adventure as they try to stop people from walking into the video room. Like, that could have been really fun.
Yeah, and Rose gets, like, also, like, the time jump confused me because it was nighttime and then all of a sudden it was the morning. So there was definitely time for, like, Rose and Doctor to have met up again and Rose to have told him about Magpies and the Doctor to have gone and investigated Magpie himself. And that all could have been avoided if the Doctor had known to go after Magpie sooner. But this just goes back to the fact that Rose is a teenager. I don't know, maybe at this point she's 20, 21. I was actually just talking to, because I was ranting about how much I hate Idiot's Lantern, and Nicole, who was on our last episode, was saying that because Rose is like 19, 20, 21, just expected that she would make dumbass decisions, which I wholeheartedly agree with.
All right. I want to talk about this because if I don't talk about this, then I'll just be wanting to talk about this whole time. Let's just talk about Eddie Connolly and get that out of the way because it makes me so angry. It also feels really bizarre because the entire episode sets up, like, we're constantly calling Connolly out. We're supporting Rita and Tommy. We are making it very clear the entire episode. No, Mr. Connolly is in the wrong. Mm-hmm. He is the bad guy, mm-hmm. right? There is no redeeming moment ever in this entire episode for Mr. Connolly. He is the bad guy.
Mm-hmm.
And then for some bizarre, and also like very clearly, like he has a bad relationship with Rita and Tommy separately. He has bad relationships with both of them. But particularly with Tommy, the entire time he is pushing him down, trying to squash him into a very particular box that he clearly doesn't fit in. Like, he's trying to make Tommy into a copy of himself or to be more traditionally 1950s masculine when he clearly isn't and doesn't want to be and has dreams of going to college, has good relationships with his mother and Nan, and then clearly has some kind of ambition to do something with his life.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the end, Rose, who I can the only way I can make this make sense in my head is that Rose, as we've seen, has a quite complicated relationship with the idea of fatherhood and like child and father and what that means. But not everyone is Pete Tyler, okay? Rose lucked out. Rose lucked out. Rose had a great dad. Tommy's relationship with his dad is not the same. And just I hate that ending in particular. Because very clearly Tommy is in this very vulnerable space where he's just very recently, like literally an hour ago maybe, fully like realized and recognized what his relationship with his dad means and has made the decision to separate from him and to get out of his space and he's recognized that was bad for him. That there was an abusive relationship, very clearly both emotionally and physical, because there's that awful moment in the living room where Eddie Connolly is completely comfortable openly admitting to beating Tommy.
And it's so upsetting because Rose is encouraging him to go back into that incredibly toxic relationship.
To the point where Tommy is literally carrying Eddie's baggage.
It's ridiculous.
No, Tommy, get out of there.
Like, it's so upsetting.
You can't sandwich Rita throwing Eddie out of the house and having that be a triumphant moment and a good moment and a very clearly, like, good for her, yes moment, and then sandwich that literally right next to Tommy deciding to stay with him and having that also be a triumphant moment. Like, it doesn't make sense.
It doesn't make sense at all. It feels so awkward and uncomfortable, and I hate it.
Fuck the Doctor and Rose smiling off into the distance, drinking orange pop. Like, fuck you. No, get him out of there.
No, I don't like it. I don't like it at all.
Let Tommy and Rita be companions on the TARDIS for a little bit. That would have been adorable.
That would have been adorable. All right, that's all I had to say about the episode. I guess we're done.
I hate that that almost doesn't feel like a joke. Okay. What else can we talk? What else can we? Okay, so The Wire. Pretty weak villain, I'm going to say.
Oh my goodness, such a weak villain. Because Eddie Connolly was the real villain the whole time.
Right? Like, we put all of this energy into Eddie Connolly. So that it's such a weirdly constructed episode. It's so strange.
Looking at all of the episodes that he's written together, the thing that is, like, clicking in my brain, especially noting that he also wrote Victory of the Daleks and Empress of Mars, is reminding me that this episode has a very interesting view of what it means to be British and an interesting view of empire. I'm particularly thinking of the line, "This is Churchill's England, not Stalin's Russia."
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I know. I'm an American. I'm not, like, I think my closest British ancestor was my great-grandfather emigrated from Britain in 1920-something. But, yeah.
Also the line, "We may be losing the empire, but we can still stand proud." I'm like, that's an interesting take, Mr. Magpie. That's an interesting thing to say right there.
I did notice two black people right at the end of the episode at that big party. They didn't say anything, but they were there.
Wow. What a mark for progress. Production wise, everything's very pretty. Everything looks right. Everything looks good.
Yeah, I was saying, I love, like, the lighting in that, like, whole conversation. I love David Tennant's hair all slicked back. I love Rose's outfit. The thing I was gonna say, when all the people got their faces back, I just gotta wonder, all these people, the last thing they remember is getting sucked into a TV. And then they wake up and they're all trapped in a cage together.
Yeah.
And so, I just gotta wonder.
So how does that work? Like, I'm so confused.
I'm very confused.
Your face gets sucked off.
The science does not make sense.
It doesn't make sense at all.
Especially, like, because if you think about... And I know that comparing things vastly across seasons, vastly across showrunners doesn't make sense. But also, there's another, like, way in the future, Clara's first episode with 11, people get sucked into the internet and their bodies collapse and their souls basically get sucked into the internet and they get uploaded. And once they've been in the cloud for too long, their bodies die. And at the end of the episode, everyone gets released from the cloud and the people who still have bodies to go back to get go back to their bodies, but everyone else just vamooses and properly dies.
Yeah, so but the, here's what I'm struggling with. All of the language surrounding the wire in terms of how it feeds. Like it feeds, right? It's all of the, it's termed in eating, in hunger, in consumption, which could have been a fun little play on like, let's talk about the idea of television consumption. We don't go there. That could have been a fun place. If you're talking about consumption, they eat the face and get smashed up and distributed into energy, presumably. So how?
No, the way that the doctor, the way that the doctor explains it is that basically the wire eats the electronic brain waves and it's like the face is gone. But really what the wire is doing is wiping people's brains and like stealing all of their electromagnetic energy from their brains. But that doesn't make sense to me, because if the wire is stealing their brain energy, what does that have to do with their face? Like, why do their eyes and nose and mouth disappear?
Why does their face disappear? And also, this is what really concerns me. This is what makes me, this is what just like, but like, it's eaten, it's consumed, it's used. So first of all, how does it, like, just raw data, like baseline, how does it get back?
Mm-hmm.
And then two, how does it get back to the right person?
Mm-hmm.
It's gone. It's been eaten.
Also, how were all the faces showing on all those random TVs? None of it makes sense. It's all bad.
None of it makes any kind of sense. It's just confusion top to bottom. And like, what bothers me is that it's almost something.
It's almost good, but it just, it doesn't quite stick the landing.
It's almost something. Oh. All right, because we dislike this episode so much, I've got an idea for something we could do.
Okay, what's your idea? I want to hear it.
If we could rewrite The Idiot's Lantern to make sense, what would we do?
Strike it from the season lineup. No, have everyone die at the end.
Honestly, yeah.
Yeah, I would have Rose not get eaten in the first place. She wouldn't go to Magpie's by herself. She would go and track down the doctor, tell her about Magpie. The doctor would go to Magpie, confront him before the wire even gets to the transmitter, and then the doctor would do something with his sonic screwdriver to get, because the sonic screwdriver's magic wand, to get the wire to submit and basically take them down that way, and then everyone would die because that's what would make sense.
Or alternatively, you reverse, you somehow, like, the other way, because there is a way that the wire can be linked to eating and consumption and everyone be fully formed, and that is if we take the doctor's line about it gorges itself like an overfed pig, which I'm not crazy about that metaphor, but if we extend that to like Kronos eating his children whole and then Zeus like coming out so fully formed and angry.
You just make the wire throw up.
Like, if it was framed in that way, I can accept that everyone is whole because they were consumed whole. Like, if we actually made that part of the text. But the way that it is and the way that it's visualized, it's very much like in pieces. And therefore, everyone's dispersed.
And also the way that I would do it would be more like how it's done in the future episode where people get eaten by the internet, where instead of their faces disappearing and them still being able to walk around, they would just collapse and not be able to do anything.
Yeah.
As the faces disappearing and them being able to walk around doesn't make any sense.
I also hated the creepy, like, and when I say creepy, I mean that in terms of like, it is filmed to be creepy. The way the hands move and crack, like that is very deliberately just in there to create a sense of fear and to create a sense of anxiety and to like make us feel nervous around.
Threatened by them?
Yeah, to make us feel threatened.
But they're not threatening. They're not able to do anything.
Exactly. It smells of villainizing the other, and particularly people who are either neurodivergent or in, like the way that the faceless people are coded as, like the way that this whole episode just stinks of eugenics in a way that is but unexamined. And it's so
uncomfortable.
There are so many things in this episode that are just there, and all of them underbaked and unexamined. And I'm like, choose one and do it properly.
The only thing that I do really like in the episode that I will say I appreciated is the speech that Tommy gives his father about how he fought in the war against fascism, and he fought the war so that little twerps like him could do what they wanted. Because that feels so true to me, and it feels like, and it makes me think of this whole like intergenerational war that people talk about, how like between boomers and millennials and Gen Z and Gen X that everyone forgets about and silent generation. The point is, like, some older generations like to talk about how like millennials and Gen Z are like, how we're lazy or don't work as hard or are overly reliant or whatever. That's a critique that I've seen. Not everyone who's an older generation says that, but a lot of people do. And people will sometimes say stuff like, oh, if your ancestors could see how like you're not working as hard or whatever, then they wouldn't want you. But like, no, like people in like older generations, like they worked that hard so that we wouldn't have to work this hard. Like people worked harder in other generations to make lives easier for their children and their children's children. I don't understand this impulse that life should be suffering and that we should just accept the bad things that we're given. And it's like, I don't know. And maybe also it also makes me think of how we were talking about how it does make me think about Rose more and about how she wants to go off with the doctor and see the universe, like rather than stay at home and get like a job in a shop. And honestly, I get it. Like, I wouldn't want to go off and travel the universe with the doctor because that's fucking dangerous. But like, I do get the idea of wanting to see more and do more than just work a miserable job that makes like minimum or below minimum wage, that isn't high enough, that isn't as high as it should be.
Yeah, no, this is a complicated conversation that gets into sort of intergenerational conflict and how a lot of it's misplaced and how it's actually
so much of it's misplaced.
And like
there's so many people who don't fundamentally disagree, but they're so busy shouting at each other, they don't realize that they're shouting about the same thing.
Yeah. And like the interlocking restrictions that are placed on us and how like living in a post-capitalist world and all this kind of conversation that we don't really have the time or resources to get into. But yeah, no, absolutely. And also, as you were saying, this idea of I was miserable, so now you have to be miserable. Like, it comes from a very specific place of pain. Like, Eddie Connolly is a pretty, like, the way that Eddie Connolly is written is pretty over the top and pretty, it's very deliberately a caricature of the idea of the abusive husband and father, and putting all of those abusive red flags up to 11 so that you can see them and that we can critique them. And because of that, he's not given a lot of nuance. We're just meant to hate him, which is why the ending makes no fucking sense.
It really does.
But that mindset, the mindset that Eddie Connolly is working from, is very much what happens when people, usually people with privilege, who are also in positions of power where people do not feel in the position to contradict or question their views, like how that sort of, like, what I wouldn't give for, oh my gosh, this episode has so much potential to talk about, like, the idea of propaganda and the idea of empire and what that means, and like what this coronation symbolizes for all of these different people, and what it means that all of these people have just lived through two world wars, right? And some of them haven't lived through them, and some of them were born in the middle of them. Some of them, some people have died. Some people, like Tommy, were born presumably about 16 years ago, which would have been mid-war, right? Like, what? There are so many elements that are unexamined here. And if we could just, like, because the point I'm trying to make is that Eddie Connolly is actually coming from a place that makes sense for him. That makes sense for him. The way he's acting makes sense for him. But the only reason it makes sense for him is because no one has been able to have a conversation and get through to him to give him an alternative way of thinking. And that's what so much of this conflict is about, is that when people are in relationships that are unequal, where they can't talk to each other properly or communicate properly, abuses of power happen. Like, if you are going to have such a prominent storyline that is explicitly about abuse, do it properly. Let's just close this up.
This is going to be a short episode, but it deserves it because it sucks.
Mm-hmm. Do you know what it's giving me? It's giving me this episode is a energy sibling to the Buffy episode Go Fish.
I don't remember Buffy episode titles.
It's the one with the it's the one with the swim team that's turns into fishmen. And there's this whole subplot about how Buffy legitimately, like, on screen absolutely gets sexually abused, and then it's not dealt with properly at all. Or talked about properly at all. And it's just like, why did you introduce this thing if you're not going to talk about it?
Oh my goodness. Wait, there was a thing I wanted to talk about before I forget. One thing I was going to say is, did he take Tommy in the TARDIS and there was no reaction shot? We didn't get to see Tommy's reaction to the TARDIS.
Tommy was outside the TARDIS.
But how did they get to Alexandra Palace that fast when it was so far away if they didn't take the TARDIS?
Oh my god. I'm so angry. This is the point in the podcast where I'm going to ask the listeners, please, if it's not already written, write it for us, that fanfic. Fix the idiot's lantern.
I would write it, except I don't want to spend this much time on the idiot's lantern.
Give me the Tommy adventures. Give me Tommy and Rita in... Make it so, although I love the bit where she's like, this was never your house, it's in my mother's name. Love that. But also, how? Like, it's a good moment. I don't understand how that would happen logistically, but we're going to keep moving forward.
Yeah.
Have Rita and Tommy leave Eddie alone in the house. Fuck him. And then Rita and Tommy go off and have adventures in the TARDIS.
So what about Tommy's Nan? They can't just...
And Tommy's Nan. That's true. And Tommy's Nan. Can you imagine Nan in the TARDIS? That would be great.
I mean...
Nan gives Rose a good talking to.
Yeah.
Tommy's never going to see his mum or his nan again. Think about that. He's never going to see his mum or his nan again.
I mean, not never, maybe. He might... He'll probably go back for his stuff.
It's so stupid. I hate it.
That Eddie literally forces Rita to smile. I was triggered. Not gonna lie. I was pissed. I was so upset. I had to pause the episode to scream.
And the way that they're having a party. Everyone in that house, is this just an open secret? The way that their family is? Because the way, the whole dynamic.
Yeah, I was going to say, my least favorite moment is how Eddie was like taunting Rita and Tommy and Aunt Betty, I think was the name. Was like egging him on.
Right? Shut up, Aunt Betty. What? Oh!
Like, and also, like, her whole, like, outfit and aesthetic was really giving me that racist aunt that you never want to talk about.
I have a feeling Aunt Betty is Eddie's sister. Like, we've got Nan. We've got Nan and Rita. And we've got Betty and Eddie.
I hate it. Ugh. All right, what's your least favorite moment?
My least favorite moment is when Rose messes with the dynamic. Don't mess with that. That's not your place. Don't do it. Tommy is making a very healthy decision.
Yeah, actually, no, that is my least favorite moment. Never mind. It was so terrible. I'd for one brief, glorious moment, blocked it out of my brain.
And then that the doctor endorses it. Fuck all of that. Ugh.
Doctor, you know better.
You know better. Rose doesn't. She's 19 and she's got father issues. You know better.
Yeah.
Ugh.
But the doctor gives Rose whatever she wants.
My favorite moment is when Ten and Rose give Connolly what for in the living room. It's great.
Yep. Yep, that's my favorite moment.
It's a good time.
That's also my favorite moment. Like when Rose is like, Union Jack, that's a Union flag. Shame on you.
Who is the hero and who is the Adam?
Connolly's the Adam. Eddie Connolly. Since there's three of them with the last name Connolly. Eddie Connolly is the Adam.
Eddie Connolly is the Adam. I want to give Tommy the hero.
I was going to say, I think the hero is Tommy, not just because of his like self-growth and actualization that gets undone by Rose, but also because he's literally the hero because the doctor shit out of luck on the top of the tower. And then Tommy innovates and figures out that the battery was out and figures out how to fix the machine that this time traveler from like, I don't know how he did that. I don't know how he figured that out, boy from the 1950s. But he somehow intuited what the doctor had done and figured out how to fix it when it broke.
Oh, sorry. That just made me mad all over again. Because what Rose specifically says is saved the world. Hang on, let me find it. Clever enough to save the world, so don't stop there. It is not the victim's responsibility to quote unquote save or fix the abuser. Fuck that shit. Fuck that shit.
Fuck it. Fuck it all.
Also, he's brave enough and clever enough to save the world, so he should be off doing his own thing and celebrating that and being his own person. I hate it so much. We're gonna fight to be objective here.
Okay. Objectively, I will say the production was a 5.
Objectively, the production was a 5. It was very pretty. Everything was very 1950s, probably because the BBC closet has a lot of 1950s stuff in it.
Probably, yeah.
So it's a very easy period for them to do, but everything looked gorgeous.
Everything looked really gorgeous, yeah.
Writing.
If we give it higher than a 2, I'm going to riot.
Yeah, no. I'm literally... Like a 1, maybe?
Honestly, I wanted to give it a 0 from jump, but you said that was too mean before we started recording.
No, what I said was that, like, we've got to have a conversation. We've got to actually talk about it, because that's coming from a point of emotion. So we're trying to be objective.
Let's give it a 1, because it wasn't all terrible.
It wasn't all terrible. Like, here's, like, because it's a good time. Up until the point where it's not, and then it's a terrible time.
So writing is a 1. Acting, I would say, is a 5. Acting is really good.
Mm-hmm. Science is a 0. None of it made sense.
Science is a 0. It was all terrible. Rewatchability is a 0. I hate this episode. I would not have rewatched this episode if it wasn't that you're forcing me to watch all of them. I hate it.
I want to give it a 1. Only because, as I keep saying, it's a good time until it isn't. So there have been times where I've rewatched, like I've been watching through the whole season, whatever, and I've watched this episode and I always forget how it ends because I scrub it from my memory. And it's a good time up until that point. So it is rewatchable, but then it's retroactively not rewatchable.
Yeah, that's because you have a personal problem where you can't remember how terrible it is.
All right.
So altogether, 12 times 4 is 48, which is definitely an F.
Wait, what? 12 times? Where did you get 12 times 4? 5 plus 1 plus 5 plus 0 plus 1.
It's 12.
Divided by 25, which is 48.
Yeah, it's 48. Cool. That's what I said. It's 48, which is definitely an F.
Yes, it is.
That's what I said. Isn't that what I said?
It is now that I think back on it, but the way that you phrased it as opposed to how I think about math in my brain was very different. But yes, it gets a 48%, which is like negative F. Very bad.
It's very bad
episode. Wow. It did almost as badly as Christmas Invasion.
It did worse than Christmas Invasion.
No, it did better.
Oh, it did better?
Christmas Invasion got 42.
Oh, yeah, it did. Christmas Invasion did really bad.
Next is Impossible Planet and Satan's Pit Diamond. They're good ones.
They are good ones.
I remember them being good. I hope that's not. I remember this one being good, too.
I watched them fairly recently and they're pretty good.
Okay.
I will say, I know that you say there's good things about season 2, but there's no episode in season 1 that did quite as badly as these 2 episodes from season 2 did. Like, there were episodes in season 1 that didn't do great. There was even an episode in season 1 that got an F. But none of them did as terribly as Christmas Invasion and Idiot's Lantern.
I'm going to scrub this episode from my mind.
We're approaching our 1 year anniversary. Make sure you fill out our questionnaire at wibblywobblytimeywimey.net/survey and ask us questions for our Q&A and give us feedback on how we're doing. Thanks.
Thank you for listening to the Wibbly Wobbly Timey Wimey podcast.
We hope you enjoyed this adventure with us through space and time.
You can find us elsewhere on the internet on Twitter, Tumblr, and Instagram at WibblyPod. Follow us for more Wibbly Wobbly content.
You can find out more information about us and our content on wibblywobblytimeywimey.net and full transcripts for episodes at wibblywobblytimeywimey.net/transcripts.
If you'd like to get in touch with us, you can also send us an email at wibblywobblytimeywimeypod@gmail.com.
Please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts and other platforms as it helps other people find us and our content.
If you'd like to support us, you can send us a donation at paypal.me/wibblypod.
Special thanks to our editor, Dee, who has been a vital member of the Wibbly Wobbly team.
That's all for now. Catch you in the time vortex.